viewpoints expressed on The Edge are not necessarily those of this radio station, its staff, management, or other sponsors. It's time for The Edge Radio Broadcast with your host, Daniel Lott. You can join Daniel and his guests as we discover the truth together. Within the continental U.S., call toll-free 1-800-996-9638. Or locally here in Indiana, 359-5593. That's toll-free 1-800-996-9638. Or locally at 359-5593. You can find out more about our guests and topics by logging on to The Edge's website, theedgeam.com. That's theedgeam.com. And now here's your host for The Edge Radio Broadcast, here's Daniel Lott.
Welcome back to the Edge Radio Broadcast. I'm your host, Daniel Lott. Is there a lady who shines white light and wants to show you something other than the truth? You stay tuned. You just tapped into the hottest radio station in the nighttime world. This is the Edge Radio Broadcast. We're going to find out as if indeed she is buying a stairway to heaven. My friends, by the time you get done with this show, you're going to find out there's a lady who is buying you or may have bought in you a stairway to the depths of hell. For this evening, tonight's special guest, we're going to be bringing online here shortly, Stephen Schroeder. And Stephen Schroeder has collected extensive evidence that Washington, D.C. and Indianapolis are cities built for pagan worship. And he's got the evidence to back it up. So don't you tune off thinking about that's an outrageous claim, because we're going to present so much evidence, your brain will explode if you try to go to your usual place of denial. But of course, first you're going to be upset, and then we'll get you into a place of acceptance. And maybe if we present enough facts, we do not want you to leave your brain at home. In fact, the first part of hypnotism, as our guest Ole Anthony said last week, is to leave critical judgment alone. But in this show here, that's what we do every Saturday night. Well, not only do we expose those forces that are out there, we give you reasons and we give you things to research. Of what we say and what our guests say. Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Lott. Hey, stay tuned. In 2 weeks, we're going to be having Jordan Maxwell back, and we're going to be talking about secret societies. And, you know, it's going to be a perfect rollout from these two special broadcasts we're going to be having this week. You might call it a four-part series, I suppose, our first here for the Edge Radio Broadcast. And we're bringing Steve Schroeder, who, because, as you know, we broadcast here in the heart of the beast right here in Indianapolis, and he'll be right here in the studio with us momentarily. And he'll be on next week, too, so if you don't catch this show this evening, of course, you know you can catch it up on the web tomorrow. It'll be posted commercial-free, I get to you. That's our standard greeting for you. And then next week, we're going to be bringing him back. And by then, your brain should be on fire. Your computer should have been. I tell you what, I even have a note on the website there. If you believe after you listen to this show, you listen to your phone. If you hear a little click, you might be having somebody else listening on the end of the line. Or if you see maybe a black van parked out of your house, because, you know, the powers that be do not want you to hear tonight's broadcast. Now, when Steve Schroeder comes on this evening, he will present evidence that the government the ACLU, and even the Indianapolis Star, a major newspaper here. He believes and has evidence for, these are not outrageous statements in his mind because he has the evidence to prove it, that he believes they are in violation of the Constitution and state laws, and we will ask him of the facts to back that up this evening. So you stay tuned. Hey, in 3 weeks we'll be bringing Sue Storm. How many of you believe in angels out there? Probably most of you, and most of you love to watch the little angel shows here and there, and I know you got something hanging from your mirror, a little angel doll. You know what? You're all wrong on that. You know what? Because I've done my research, and if you believe in angels based on the Bible, there's not one recorded instance of a female angel. Why is that? And how come there are female angels all over your house? We're going to find out from Sue Storm here in about 3 weeks, find out why all the trinkets we have and statues and things that people pay homage to are female, but they don't seem to be male, and there's none. No females in the Bible. And then later we're going to be having some more exciting guests. If you want to know our upcoming guests, go to the Edge website, and at the bottom of the screen you will find out that we're going to be bringing on Patrick Heron. There's a good one coming up in a few weeks, maybe next month. He'll be talking about the Nephilim and the pyramids. So many people have been trying to make that connection. What is it about the pyramids? Did we build that from a bunch of people who were just walking around? So I got handed a note here, and my program producer, Mr. Producer, what does this note say? Hang on, I got a note here. He has to clarify that. He's over here writing notes, handing them to me. Can you believe he's handing me notes during the broadcast? Oh, how much did I pay this guy? Ah, new forum. Okay, thank you, Mr. Program Director Stephen Fields. Handed me a note. Yes, he wanted me. He said, Daniel, tell them about the brand new state-of-the-art forum that we have up there for you. You know, we get so many accolades from our website, and our forum was, it was a good one, and we have thousands of posts up there now from some of our avid listeners and those who like to talk about these type of topics, but we've integrated a brand new one up there, and it is one of the coolest forums out there. So go to the AJM.com website, and then go to the forum, join it. That's, you know, the forum is where we continue the conversation, because we don't want it to end right here. This is just a broadcast. This is just a shout out. This is just some information to get you people out there going to continue the conversation, because we can't expose the forces of darkness sitting behind this mic here. We need people out in the field. You guys need to discuss it and find out what we're talking about here, because you know, there is power in the multitudes. And one of the things is we have when Stephen Schroeder comes, I'm going to talk to him about it. How is it he found out so much information? And then us out here as regular folks don't seem to know about it. Who is withholding the information that he's going to be bringing? So you stay tuned here in just a bit. We'll bring him on the line here. My name is Daniel Lott. We're here every Saturday night. We thank you so very much for tuning in, and we'll be right back after the break.
It's starting to rain again. The rain had cracked up a little bit. It burst into flesh. My, get out of the way, please. 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It is over humanity and all the...
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shoot.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin from NBC News. Former Beatle John Lennon is dead. Lennon died in a hospital shortly after being shot outside his New York apartment tonight.
45 seconds after liftoff, a huge fireball in the sky.
We have a report from the flight dynamics officer that the vehicle has exploded. Flight director confirms that we're...
Tune in, buckle up, and get ready for a ride on the Edge Radio broadcast. Your mission commander, Daniel Lott.
And welcome back to the Edge Radio broadcast. We're talking about conspiracy theories tonight, so you stay tuned. Is Indianapolis a gateway to hell? Who are these crazy Masons that seem to have their stamp on every obelisk in Washington, D.C. and Indianapolis? I want to know the truth. And I know you can handle the truth. And because you can handle the truth, we're going to be bringing on right now in our studio, Steve Schroeder. Steve, welcome to the broadcast. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, we're having you on. You were actually suggested to the Edge Radio broadcast, and of course, it is so relevant because we broadcast here from the heart of the beast, as I guess you might conclude that it is. But you know a lot of things about the origin of Indianapolis, and I guess, does that carry you into Washington, D.C. as well?
Absolutely. The Washington, D.C. and Indianapolis connection is not just the fact that the same person designed it and laid it out and built it for a certain purpose. The way that Washington, D.C. is set up is set up to where Indianapolis is connected with it as far as a ritual or a routine, whatever you want to call it, how they go about apotheosizing the king. In other words, making the king into a god.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that word. What did you call that, apotheosis?
Apotheosis, yes. It's a word that means the deification of something, making something into a god or a goddess. Washington was made into a god, and the state of Indianapolis was, or the state of Indiana was made into a goddess, and it's very significant when you understand the two connections as far as the intimacy and the, that's one thing about this show. It's going to get to the point where if you have small kids, you might want to hook them up to the PlayStation or something, because it's going to get pretty graphic as far as, you know, exactly what the government is involved with. It's a fertility cult, and there will be some mentions of anatomically correct parts and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Just give them a forewarning.
Okay, well, I'm sure we can, for those family listeners, we can describe things as they can understand them. But Steve Schroeder, you not only have researched the connection between Indianapolis and Washington, D.C., but you've been known to go a little bit further. You've actually, ventured into taking some action here in Indianapolis to prove your theories. Is that true?
Well, I always consider faith without works is dead, so there has to be action, and as you'll see and as you'll find out with all this information coming out, you'll find out that just trying to talk about it doesn't affect anybody or anything, and sometimes it takes actions to actually make things happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do, while this is a sort of a neutral show between the religious world and the unexplained mysteries, UFO, and those kinds of things, we're kind of right here on the edge, and that's why it's called the Edge. But I have done research, and I'm familiar with various passages in the Bible, which a lot of people allude to, whether it be the Nephilim, the giants, or miracles of that type, or angels. We'll have in a few weeks when we have Sue Storm on here. But isn't there a passage say something to the effect of that there's something in heaven and you take it by force? Is that in the New Testament? The violent take it by force. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, the kingdoms are taken by force. And if you understand from the very beginning, I mean, we'd have to get back into the bloodlines and find out about Cain and Abel. And of course, you know, everybody thinks they had the same bloodline or whatnot. But basically, what you have is you have two different fathers. There's like one God. Everybody says there's one God, and that's the big deception right now, is the fatherhood of God and brotherhood of man. That's pretty much the foundation of the Masonic belief, is that there is one God and that all religions are part of this one God. And that is the deception of the end times, is that there is one God and all religions are part of one God.
Yeah. Now, I have read some of your material, and some of my idealism concerning George Washington, I guess we'll have to expose him for who he is, eh?
Well, you know, you gotta call it as you see it. Unfortunately, Christians would like to believe that George Washington, everybody they learned about in school, was Christian. People are cared about Christian ideas and principles. But the bottom line here is, sooner or later, the church is going to have to realize that everybody you learned about in school, most everybody you learned about in school, were involved with a Masonic secret organization that's involved with satanic cult worship. And their whole purpose was to establish a revived Roman Empire here in the North Country, a government that is pro-polytheism. The age-old conflict is between polytheism and monotheism, those who believe that there is one God and those who believe there are many gods. Mm-hmm. And basically the revived Roman Empire, the New World Order, is basically just to establish polytheism once again as the state's preferred religious.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so polytheism then is the worship of many gods.
Or the belief that the world is governed by many gods.
That the world is governed by many gods, okay. And then we have monotheism, and what the Judeo-Christian ethic is about?
Yeah, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all believe in the monotheism.
All right, now, so let's talk about, start to venturing down the line. Because we have this sort of divided into four segments, what we want to do, because this information is so explosive and so controversial, we want to start back there, Stephen. Let's go back. I guess, is the Garden of Eden the beginning place where you talk about this beginning conflict that will bring us through the different, as we come through our information, through the different shows, will bring us right up to the day? Do we start there? Is that the best place?
I would think absolutely the best place to start would be in the beginning.
Okay, because I did read some of your material, and I will refer to it from time to time during our program to facilitate the interview, but I was particularly interested in the fact that you said that there were two voices. Are you saying there was not actually a serpent in the garden?
Okay, you'll find out there was a force that was changed into a serpent. But the best place to start is in the beginning, absolutely, and to let everybody know exactly what happened, because I guess church and Sunday school is not a real good place to be talking about, intimacy and sexual intercourse and all this other stuff. And I'm sure it's about time. But in the beginning, you had Adam and Eve. And Adam listened to the voice of the Creator, and Eve listened to the voice of, well, you could say the destroyer. And that's where we need to get down to the basics, as far as there is one God. Even the demons and devils know there is only one God. But there has always been, since the beginning, since man was made with a free will and a choice, two voices to choose between. Adam heard the voice of the Creator, and Eve was at a certain place in a garden of paradise, in the midst of the garden, to where there was this tree, to where a voice of the adversary could be heard. And that it was a tree of knowledge. And if you go into the Bible, the word to know someone or to knowledge is to have sexual relations or intercourse with someone. Like saying Abraham knew his wife. It's a biblical term meaning to know them. So the tree of knowledge was a place where Eve had learned or become enlightened on how to procreate. It wasn't God's... there's nothing wrong with, you know, having children or whatnot, but it wasn't God's timing. In other words, God just made Adam and Eve, and they were like his children and his babies in the garden, and it wasn't time for them to procreate or to have life. And that's where you get into the differentiations between the two types of beings down here, the sons of light or the sons of darkness. You have those who are born of the will of God, and you have those who are born of the will of flesh. Okay, so when Eve was in the Garden of Eden, she was enlightened on how to procreate. And no doubt it was probably looking upon this tree that was pleasant to behold. And like the tree downtown, if you understand about what the tree is in the obelisk, and downtown is the world's largest Christmas tree, and it just happens to be in the midst of this garden that the State Pumpkin calls the Garden of Paradise. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, art has a way of communicating thought. And you can have the voice of God talking to you, but if you look at some artwork, or you'll automatically get a thought come into your mind, and that thought is usually contrary to the two voices. In the beginning, Eve listened to the voice of this, well, you could call it a serpent, but at the beginning of the conversation, it was a voice that she heard.
Hey, Stephen, stop right there. Why did the devil, I guess the serpent here, why didn't he talk to Adam?
Well, because I think Adam had heard the voice of God and knew the voice of God, and it's important when you know and you hear the voice of God. If you hear another voice contrary, you would be able to see the difference. Eve was never recorded as far as hearing the voice of God, so the voice she heard was a voice of reason or logic, stating, you know, this is how you're going to propagate your species, and this is what's necessary, and pretty much promised them, if you listen to my voice, you won't die, you'll live forever. And it was basically the old temptation that she fell for, and basically Adam participated with it, and that's when they realized that they was naked. So the first son that was conceived was Cain, and it was conceived by the will of the serpent, not the will of God. It was after Adam and Eve was cast out of the Garden of Eden that God gave the instructions to be fruitful and multiply. So in other words, Abel was then the firstborn of God, because it was the firstborn son that was born of the will of God. Cain was born of the will of the flesh. And if you go back to the story of Abraham and Sarah, it's the same situation where God promised Abraham a son. And instead of Abraham waiting for more directives or clarification exactly what that meant, he used his own reason and logic and really didn't need God to tell him how to have a son. And so he used his own reason and logic and looked at Hagar, the bondwoman, as far as the fulfillment of that promise. But that wasn't meant to be, and God instructed Abraham. Why didn't you have the child by your wife, Sarah? And it's like, well, she's too old. And that's what happens when you have the will of man over the will of God. So the firstborn of Abraham was Ishmael, and that's a cross between the Jew and an Egyptian, which makes the first Arab. And that's why you have a conflict between the Arabs and the Jews right now, is because the firstborn is supposed to be the inheritance, who is supposed to receive the inheritance. And God did not even recognize Ishmael because it wasn't his will for him to be the son of promise. Mm-hmm. And just like Cain offered a vegetation offering, and God rejected it and basically didn't acknowledge Cain because Cain wasn't the son of God. And that's where you have the two classifications of beings down here. You have the sons of flesh and you have the sons of promise, those who are born of the will of God and those who are born of the will of man.
Okay, hang on right there. I got a question for you. Because this comes up from time to time. Is the fact that there is as you said, two different types of beings on the earth, are these other beings, do they have spiritual souls?
Well, they're all spirit beings, in my opinion. If you look at the Dead Sea Scrolls, you'll see that there's a final battle between the sons of light and the sons of darkness. And it's pretty much a battle for the planet, as bizarre as that sounds. Basically, you have two beings down here, and one believes are sons of God, and the other ones are sons of Satan. Everybody thinks there's one God, but even Christ clarified it when you had a religious person saying, "Well, I'm a son of Abraham, therefore I'm a son of God." And he clarified and corrected him and said, "No, you are a son of the devil because it's his words you hear, it's his voice you obey, and it's his works that you do." And that's what differentiates between the sons of God and the sons of the destroyer. You have the creator and you have this destroyer. In the beginning, man had to choose between the voice of the creator or the voice of the destroyer. And unfortunately, he's listening to the voice of the destroyer. So Cain was the firstborn son of the will of the serpent. And he said after he committed the first homicide, because, of course, he's listening to and obeying the voice of the destroyer, he killed his brother and shed his blood and told God it was too much for him to bear. And so God put a mark upon him that he would never perish. And that's where you have the Cain bloodline. The first bloodline of Cain is a reptilian bloodline because the father of Cain, the spiritual father of Cain, was the voice of the serpent, the reptile.
Now that fits very well with the Edge Radio broadcast, because you just mentioned reptilians, and while our program director isn't turning into a shape-shifting reptilian, others believe that the aliens are reptilian. Do you believe that there's are beings right now that they look like humans, but indeed they might be reptilian underneath?
Well, that's what I think is real important. The thing is, you have shows and people who have a lot of speculation about UFOs and aliens. But when you think about it, there is an alien life form down on this planet that wasn't from here, wasn't originated here, wasn't intended to be here. God did not create death. Okay, through man came death. So there is a force down here, there's a being down here that doesn't come from the earth or wasn't from the earth. It was actually cast down here. So you could say that was an alien being. And he is the serpent of old, and he is the reptile, and it would be a reptilian bloodline from the Cain. And that's where you have all, you know, the deception that people think that their vote counts or they can elect officials. It's all about bloodline. I mean, like the Messiah came from a royal bloodline of the Davidian family. On the same hand, you have bloodlines which is important to the Cain and the reptilian and the rule down here. And it's not about electoral vote. It's not about popular vote. It's about bloodlines. And if you do the research, you'll find whoever sits in the White House has the most royal, that's blue blood bloodline.
Does George Bush have royal blood?
Yeah, him and George Washington and Hitler and even Vlad the Impaler, known as Dracula, all have the same royal blood.
Really?
As well as Kerry.
Now, is this a coincidence that you have George Washington, who was the most worshipful grand Mason, and now we have George W. Bush? Is that just some off coincidence?
Yeah, I made the connection with George W. And George Washington. The only connection is one started it and one's finishing it. You think about all the people on this planet that's, or even in this nation, that's, you know, candidates that could be president to end up with a father and a son combination. That should let people know.
So you're saying statistically that that proves something is behind the scenes?
More than likely, we had that George Bush Sr. He's the one who declared the New World Order back a while back, about 10, 11 years ago.
Well, Steve Schroeder, I know we're going to be talking about, of course, we're going to get up to the Illuminati, and we're going to get to the all-seeing eye, which part of my intro, as I said, the Masons have their stamp everywhere in this culture, and I don't think it's just for fun and games either. It must be for to mark or some kind of or empowerment of their organization. But have you ever seen that little owl that's on the dollar bill that you have to use a microscope or a magnifying glass to see?
Yeah, I've seen the owls, and there's trillions of different symbols. Once you start seeing them, you'll see a lot of different little things they put that has to do with Molech and the god of wisdom and night. And
well, when you talk about it, you just mentioned, okay, that as we begin to train our eyes, as we come out of the matrix to begin to see for the first time, which hopefully many of our listeners will be able to do after listening to these two exciting broadcasts, but is there a possibility that we veer off into Never Never Land and see a conspiracy behind every dollar bill?
Well, I think facts are facts. I mean, conspiracies, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you can say it's a conspiracy, but facts will speak for themselves. And once you hear the whole story, you see that all these little pieces that don't make any sense start fitting together. It's hard to deny it.
Okay. All right, so you're saying there's going to be an overwhelming abundance of evidence that somebody who claimed to have any logic at all should come to some conclusion.
Well, without a doubt.
Okay. All right, Stephen Schroeder, we'll go ahead and go to a break right now. I think we've got a foothold into the Garden of Eden. We're going to come out of the Garden of Eden and find out where that falls. Everybody, you're listening to Steve Schroeder, and we're talking about the pagan connection between Indianapolis and Washington, D.C., and we're just getting started. If you don't think you have enough so far, just because we're giving an intro, we're coming back right after the break, and we'll have it, and we'll crank it up for you. My name is Daniel Ott. We're here every Saturday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard.
Or fiction, discovering the truth together here on the Edge Radio broadcast.
The edge of controversy, the edge of conspiracy, the edge of reality. You're listening to The Edge with Daniel Ott.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to The Edge Radio broadcast. If you missed this interview, they'll be posted up on the Internet site tomorrow, www.theedgeam.com. And if you have a question about Illuminati, paganism in your country, in your capital, in Indianapolis, if you live here listening on The Edge, you just go to theedgeam.com website, click on Fast Blast. And back online here, we have Stephen Schroeder. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, so we're coming out of the Garden of Eden. We're talking about the basic origin of paganism. Now, what you say is that Cain was born from the will of the devil.
Yep, that's absolutely right. It wasn't time for Adam or Eve to procreate yet. And Cain was born by the will of flesh, and that's why they lost paradise. And from there, you had the Babylonians and the Egyptians and the Romans all having the same God. If you understand that Cain offered a vegetation offering, you'll see that this God of war, this God of earth, or God of nature, as Washington liked to call it, would be given vegetation offerings, mm-hmm. and that's what was rejected. He's a god of nature, and he rejected the vegetation.
Mm-hmm. So as we'll find out in this broadcast interview with Stephen, that there's no accident why he offered up vegetation.
Absolutely not. It's one of those things. It's kind of odd if you look back as far as time travel. He was actually doing something that the Egyptians and the Romans and the Babylonians were doing, whether they got it from him or mm-hmm. how he knew that his God liked vegetation. There's mm-hmm. two different voices and two different gods down here, and it's the God of earth mm-hmm. against the God of heaven right now.
Okay, we have a question to come in on Fast Blast, and they want to know why didn't Adam listen to God and disobey what Eve had said?
Well, I think the serpent is sly. That's one of his characteristics. He's known for being smart. He will not. Satan will always enter into that which you love the most to deceive you. You can't recognize it. You can't see something that that you love or you care for, you think cares for you, could do you any harm. And so Satan will always enter into that which you love the most in order to, mm-hmm. to trip you up. And I think that's where patriotism comes in. You love something so much, you care for something, you never perceive it as being that which can stumble, make you stumble or destroy you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Stephen, so we're coming out of the Garden of Eden, our Garden of Eden now. Now let's go. What's happening after that? Now we have this murder going on. What's up with that?
Well, you had the Cain obviously worship the God of Earth, the God of death, war, and destruction, and he has to have blood sacrifice. That's where he gets his strength and his life is from the blood sacrifice. And once Cain slew his own brother and shed the blood, basically he became the incarnate of this God of Earth, and it was through Cain that all these other kingdoms got established, were actually world empires, if you think about it, at the time the Babylonians and the Egyptians and the Romans. And it's one God against the other down here, and it's basically two types of people down here, and unfortunately, half of them don't really know what's going on.
Now, how can we know whose side we're on, by the way? How do we know we're not deceived, we're walking along the line of Cain right now?
Well, it's pretty easy. There's two voices down here. Once you understand that there is indeed one God, but there's two voices to choose from. The Word of God is consistent. God's voice is consistent, and that's why it's important to understand the Word of God. And you'll find that the voice of the adversary is always contrary to that Word. So you'll have God's Word, and you'll have the Word is totally contrary. And that's why, as far as shapeshifters and all that's concerned, it says not to judge by the outer appearance, but listen to what's being said, because it'll either echo the words of God, or it'll be contrary and resistance to the Word of God. And that's how you tell it to the two voices. That's how simple it's really broken down.
So you believe that the government is being used as the voice of the adversary?
I have no doubt that the Washington listened to the voice of the serpent and built the kingdom of Washington in compliance with the directive found in Revelation. Mm-hmm. He told him to make an image of the beast, and the image of the beast is not only just the man, it's the kingdom itself. And Washington was built in compliance with the serpent's mandate. And it's like everything else. You'll know a tree by its fruit it bears. And if you just go down through the line as far as everything about this government of Washington, you'll see that it matches up with the bad guy, not the good guy.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the information that you found out about Indianapolis and the paganism involved there, and, of course, from Washington, D.C., for those living in other cities, are these two cities exclusive for paganism, or is this a type of activity festering through small towns across America as well?
I wouldn't say it's exclusive to Indiana, but Indiana has a very major significance as far as being in the midst of the garden and its connection with Washington as far as the process of apotheosis of changing something into a god. But every state, they would be surprised if they would go around and look. Like especially the Ten Commandments monuments, you have a church really backing the idea of the display of the Ten Commandments. And I've always been opposed to it since I ran into one downtown and realized that a pagan state isn't the proper caretaker of something so sacred as the Word of God. And I don't recall where the Ten Commandments was ever supposed to be put on display. It was basically kept in an ark to shield it from possible desecration of these other graven images.
All right, Stephen Schroeder. Now, we're right here at the murder scene. We have this character named Cain who was listening to the adversary's voice, not the voice of the Lord God. When he spilled the blood, did demons come forth from the depths of hell? Was a gate opened? Was a door opened at that point?
I think the gate was opened with the offering. If you understand the Egyptian religion, when they offer the offering, it is to conjure up the spirit, to give the spirit life into the physical realm, and make it a living being. It required life to be taken, and that's where the blood came into the sacrifice of the blood. Once you sacrifice, then the God becomes a reality in the physical realm. Mm-hmm. But it is a process of opening the doorway.
Mm-hmm. Abel's blood hit the ground. Was anything? Was you saying there was a door already open? But wasn't the? Didn't that not complete the sort of Egyptian or pagan ritual? Though, after that completeness, what happened?
Well, I think once the blood was shed and it came in contact with the earth, it was one of those things where it pretty much sealed the God of Earth's rule and reign down here. And pretty much his modus operandi is you'll have war, death, and destruction. And that is how he is serving. And he's the God of that. So it just fits perfectly into this God of war and his need or desire for the blood sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's continue on then. The sacrifice or the murder happened there. Now, that happened outside the garden, is that right?
The murder happened, well, I'd say it was the garden. I don't know what the actual diameter of the garden was, but it was it happened. I'd say it happened in the garden.
Okay, and now God put a couple of cherubims by the garden to keep them from coming back, right?
Excellent.
Would you consider that those cherubims must have been some sort of very large warring angel?
Well, you could look at it like that, or you could look at it like it was the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean as far as keeping man from the garden coming back into it.
Mm-hmm. Where was the garden, by the way? Do you have any idea where that was?
Well, according to Christopher Columbus, he believed that this was the Garden of Eden, where this continent over here, during the Spanish Inquisition, got some information that there was another continent over here, a lost city of Atlantis, type of lost paradise, to where there was Phoenicians and tribes of Israel that was currently going back and forth to this continent over here and had set up a lot of different structures that the archaeologists find in Babylon and in those areas there that... It proves that they set up shop over here a long time before the discovery of Columbus. But, I mean, if you look at Noah and Noah's Ark and the pre-Noah flood, if you look at America, you'll see that an ark isn't, when you flood it, if you flood the earth, an ark is not going to rise up and come right back down where it was sitting or whatnot. It's all speculation, but there's a lot of facts and evidence in America that's been dug up that show that there was Babylonian and Egyptian influence here, whether it started here and got transported over there or was there and it came over here from the Phoenicians and sailors.
Okay, well, let's we're out of the garden now. We're moving along. We've got the death of Abel. Where does it go from here? How close do we get to the Tower of Babel from there?
Well, you have Cain and his bloodline, and listening to this serpent who is going to enlighten man and make him equal to God.
Yeah, well, by the way, Stephen, do you believe that there was a pre-Adamic race of beings?
Well, it's like right now, while we're here on this planet, there's other stars up there, and each star is a sun, and each sun has a possibility with planets and life. When he created life, I don't think it's restricted to one area. It could be more advanced. It could be more primitive than what we have here. But I wouldn't limit God as far as his creation being limited to just this planet.
Okay. All right. We'll continue on now. We're heading to the Tower of Babel now.
Okay. When Cain, the descendants of Cain, made themselves known. If you read the Bible, you'll see that there was the sons of God coming down to earth. There was a way for them to come down here and know the physical females down here and actually have children. They could call giants, men of well-renowned. So there was a doorway that was opened up to where those that were in the upper realm were able to come down to the physical realm. The Babylonians understood, and the Tower of Babel was nothing more than platforms built one upon the other, representing the different planets. And
which, by the way, they have found the foundation for the Tower of Babel, haven't they?
Yeah, it's the Tower of Babel was called the Gateway to God, and it was a place to where it was a doorway to the other side, the other realm. The Babylonians understood about sacred geometry and how to build superstructures. And the Egyptians the same way, to where they would build a physical structure on the physical plane that was in replication of the celestial realm. In other words, like the three pyramids in Giza are built and situated as the three stars in Orion's belt. That way you have not only a physical kingdom, but it's a replication of a celestial kingdom. Therefore, the king is not just a physical king, but he's also a celestial being, therefore a god.
Could those builders pyramids, could they see the Orion's belt and make a mimic of it, or did somebody tell them how to put the pyramids there?
Well, I'm sure all the knowledge they received from somewhere. And they were able to gaze up at the stars. I'm sure it was a lot clearer skies back in then where they could actually see the stars. But as far as their knowledge comes from, obviously, we look at their knowledge now and wonder how this advanced civilization had so much information and knowledge, but it just goes to confirm that they did have access and knowledge to universal intelligence.
Okay, so when you said that they created a structure of the celestial in this physical realm, was it the people or the priests, were they able to actually leave this planet, or were they able to go through doorways? Were they able to go to the other side and come back?
Well, that was the whole purpose for the designs of designing a city in replication of the celestial. The king's whole purpose was to become deified. He would live on the physical earth. He would do his deeds. He would become legendary or have deeds greater than most gods or whatnot. But then as death, he would basically be apotheosized, however you want to say it, where he become equal to a god. And the whole process of building these cities were to open up doorways to where these beings could come into this realm. And once you get into it, it's a lot of information to try to digest without the book. But if you look at the illustrations or whatnot, you'll see that there's three different realms and there's three different planes. And the physical realm would be built on top of the... In replication of the celestial realm, so you would have these two realms together.
Well, Steve Short, why would they want to inhabit this realm anyway? Do they just don't like where they're at now?
Well, we're looking at it from an opposite mode. We think that they're coming down here, and back in the time, I'm sure the angels came down here to have relationships with the physical beings, and that's why basically God had to destroy the earth at that time, because there was a mixing of two realms that wasn't allowed or his will. The problem is, we're looking at it reverse. It's the underworld that we should be concerned with, because their purpose is, in order to get to heaven, they would have to travel through the underworld. In other words, the gate up above is also the doorway below, and they would have to travel through the underworld in order to gain access into the upworld. And it's like when I was smaller, I always wondered about how could there be war in heaven. It talks about war in heaven in Revelation.
Fact or fiction? Discovering the truth together here on the Edge Radio broadcast.
And welcome back to the Edge Radio broadcast. This show's been under attack for the last couple of days, unknown entities trying to prevent this broadcast from coming out. So we're sorry for the inconvenience there. Hey, if you want to listen live, go to the edgeam.com website. You can hear the broadcast. Tell all your friends anywhere in the world. We thank all of our affiliate stations for logging on. Stephen Schroeder, we're talking about the Tower of Babel. Why do these beings come in and out? Why don't they just stay in their own dark place?
Well, like I was saying earlier, the whole process is the underworld. I was always wondering how there was war in heaven. But the way they set up these kingdoms, they build the kingdoms in the physical realm in replication of the celestial realm. Now, the problem with that is you got the physical realm and the celestial realm is one, but the foundation that they built these on were magic squares or talismans that actually were used to conjure up from the lower realm, or to open up the door from the lower realm to the physical realm. And the problem here is you have the lower realm now having access to the physical realm, and also having access from the physical realm up into the celestial realm, to where you have these beings that were at one time in the underworld now having access into heaven to actually challenge the God in heaven and to challenge his authority and his throne.
Why is it, and I know there's a lot of information in the book of Revelation about this war, Armageddon. There have been so many movies about Armageddon. Does the devil really think he can win this war? I mean, we've played the movies. He loses. Why does he continue to believe he can win?
If you look around, you'll see that he's got every reason to believe he's going to win with the condition of the church and the deception with the way it is. I believe he thinks he can win because it's not over until the lady sings. And the way it is right now, he's got the church and the citizens and the people and everybody pretty much deceived as far as what's really going on down here.
Now, when you talk about the government being involved with paganism, wouldn't it just be a few that would actually be involved with that, and the rest of them are just sort of minions doing the bidding of the superiors?
Well, you have your masters and then you have your servants, and that's the unfortunate thing about these secret societies and these cults. You have, you know, like 99% of good old boys with good intentions that really don't know what they're involved in, but are trying to find this esoteric knowledge that that will preserve them into the afterlife. And it's really a shame that you have people with good intentions not realizing what they're involved with.
Yeah. Now, I guess that kind of goes along with the John Kerry and the George Bush election there. It seems many people say that Howard Dean had that locked up for the Democrats. All of a sudden, he just went away. And then after George Bush won, Kerry just immediately went running from the scene to make sure that he did not challenge that election. Was that because these forces wanted George Bush to win?
Well, that's the bottom line here. The bottom line is the popular vote doesn't matter. The electoral vote doesn't matter. It's all about bloodlines. And you had Kerry and Bush, who are both elite members of the Skull and Bones. And the Skull and Bones is a Masonic secret organization who worships the God of Death. Mm-hmm. I mean, Death is their God. That's why they're called the Brotherhood of Death.
Mm-hmm.
Through man came death, and therefore death is a man-made thing. It's not a God-made thing. That's why God is able to war against it, and that's why man considers death a God, because, well, he made it, and if he can make a God, then he's above God.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the Tower of Babel then. Did it almost seem like God was worried that man would have been able to become like him or to ascend up to visit him?
Well, it definitely got his attention, and it's kind of interesting to think that man could make a structure that would get the attention of God, to where he would say, let's go down here and see what they're doing, because there's a disturbance here, and it was definitely something that got his attention, and therefore I wouldn't consider it a threat, because there's nothing really threatening to him, but it definitely caused concern that man was able to build structures that would open portals to where he could have access in and out.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it real tricky to try to put something in a certain cell or holding block if he keeps on getting out.
Now, and to allow the the horrors of hell to be able to build these structures to allow the demonic forces to start to rise up and materialize into this world. Is that even, does that whole possibility exist because God creates spiritual and natural laws that he himself abides by? For instance, the building of that which is in the heavenly realms, if you build it here on earth, you have this certain sort of power. Is that because God created a law that is, whether it works for good or bad, it's a law that he abides by himself?
Well, as far as laws go, this the gematria and sacred geometry that they use, there's unexplainable things that are involved when you're talking about the sacred geometry and building these superstructures. Everything is by God. In other words, God made everything except for death. And there's laws that apply as far as the laws of nature and whatnot. But there's other laws to other realms. I mean, there's some things, like when God called all the angels together and Satan appeared, he asked him, how did he get into the spiritual realm? How did he get to the presence of God? Because he'd obviously been cast out. And he said, from going to and fro and up and down into the earth. So I'm sure God is all-knowing, but there's still some things. If God cannot be united with evil or whatnot, there are some evil things that he's probably not aware of simply because he's got to remain separate from the evil.
Hmm. So you're saying God allows himself not to know?
Well, I'm just saying there's some things that I can't. He's all knowing.
Well, for instance, he asked Lucifer the question. He said, "Where have you been?" I mean, didn't he know?
Well, I believe to a certain extent he did, but it's
maybe you wanted to see if he was still a liar.
Well, he was asking Adam where were you or where are you when he was hiding from God, and I don't think Adam's camouflage was that effective back in the day. It's one of those things where he asks questions for good reason, and it's mm-hmm. for us to figure the answer out.
Okay, well, it is true, because I guess if God wanted us to know everything, he would have given us all the information. Perhaps God, part of the spiritual laws is that we must research these things for ourselves to find out, to explore the universe or explore the history and to find out, because I don't know why, I've asked this question to other guests, why does he just tell us, you know, what he wants? So many people say, they don't know what God wants, and they go seek counselors or prophets or whatnot. So that's a kind of a valid question. It does seem that the way he has it set up is that we must indeed search, and hence ergo, perhaps that's why we have the Edge Radio broadcast, because we search in areas that no person in their right mind would go. Or maybe they should be. Maybe, in fact, they're not in their right mind, and they should have been here all along. How about that? All right, hey, we got a question here coming in, just a very simple one. Steven Schroeder, do you have a website or contact information or email or anything?
All the information is fairly new. I know I've been doing this for about 12 years as far as gathering information. We've yet to get a website. You can contact me at a post office box, 17671, mm-hmm. Indianapolis, Indiana, 46217, yeah. If you want to contact me. But as far as a website, we're working on it. It's all pretty much new and...
Well, for those who object to anybody cashing in on knowledge received from God, I guess you're not at a cashing in sort of point. But, of course, they can always email the Edge Radio Broadcast Program Director. We certainly know how to get a hold of you, so if something pretty important, by the time we get done with these two broadcasts, I think a lot of people are going to be trying to get a hold of you to get some more information, because, as you said earlier, that if you're a church goer, chances are you're not going to have any of this information, because it doesn't lend itself to build those machines of the church kingdom here. So, all right, we got about another minute and a half before we go to our 9 o'clock breaker. Steven Schroeder, lead us the way out here. Give us some information on our way out.
Well, I just wanted to, let everybody know exactly what's going on, and it's going to be hard to try to break these down into four different hours of all this information, because it's a lot of information. It's a lot of years of information. So if you want to get a hold of you can contact me on my web, my email at protestantsep@yahoo.com. If you want to leave a message, if you want to get together and have group talks or discussions with people and let them know exactly what's going on and debate these things, I'm more than happy to get with your church and group and organization and talk about it.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Stephen Schroeder. We'll bring you back after the break. Everybody, you're listening to the Edge Radio broadcast. And, of course, this radio interview will be posted up on our website tomorrow. Hey, as our program's director, we have an amazing line of communication. It's so high-tech, he throws a note at me, and that's what we call high-tech. And it said, tell the folks about the forum. So you go to the edgeam.com website and experience the quality of the show. In fact, we do have a number of officials listening to the show here in Indianapolis because they want to know what Stephen Schroeder has to say. And in fact, there are some people that would rather he not be on tonight's program. And of course, that's precisely why he is here. And that's why we have the Edge radio broadcast. Hey, if we're not on in your area, go to your local broadcaster. Tell them the Edge is a free program that we give to anyone. All you have to do, the transmitters, just reroute the signal up the transmitters. We'll be back here right after the break.
Southern Texas coast, and again, right basically into the Rio Grande Valley once the rainfall continues to move inland once the storm weakens later next week.
This is the Bulletin on the Edge, are not necessarily those of this radio station, its staff, management, or other sponsors. Welcome back to the Edge Radio Broadcast. In this hour of The Edge, we're going to have interesting topics and special guests. And you can be involved by clicking on the Fast Blast link on the EdgeAM.com website. Again, that's the Fast Blast on the EdgeAM.com website. Or get involved locally by calling 317-359-5593. Let's get to The Edge Radio Broadcast with your host, here's Daniel Ott.
Is the end of the world coming? It's paganism, masonry, the Illuminati on the prowl for your freedom to make you a slave to the system, to the man, to the beast. You're listening to the EdgeAMRadio.com show. That's one crazy intro right there. Welcome back, everybody, on our newsmaker line right here in the studio, and we've turned it into a newsmaker microphone, Stephen Schroeder. And Stephen Schroeder, in the first hour, we set the ground, and I guess so did King. He set somebody in the ground there, but welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
All right, and just talk right close, a little closer there to the mic there. And, well, we were talking about the Tower of Babel and whether or not God was worried that man would soon become as one of them. Who was he talking about? Did he say as one of us? Who's the them there?
I would believe it's the people who dwell in that realm. It was a situation critical enough for him to get involved with because man had obviously found a way. He said there was nothing that man could put his mind together that wouldn't be able to accomplish. He was concerned that man had the ability to traverse into realms. If you can understand the consequences of that, then you can understand why he got involved and tried to interfere with that and scatter them and scatter their speech, confuse their speech.
Okay, so the speech was very important. Why was the speech? Is it because there's power in words or power of people understanding each other? And haven't we arrived there now with the computer?
I would say we're getting to the same point of time as the Tower of Babel where people are all able to communicate and express their thoughts and be pretty much in rebellion to the Creator and His authority.
Hmm. Okay, all right, Stephen Schroeder, we're moving along on the Tower of Babel, and you said there's something about the different layers. Did one king make all those layers, or was that done over generations?
My skills aren't in archaeology. All I know is that they built different layers, and they painted them different colors to represent the different planets. And when you understand about Earth energy forces and how they use the other planets to open these doorways, it was was definitely a feasible event. It was possible. And if you read the scriptures, you'll see there's plenty of references to stairways and doorways and gateways.
Stairway to heaven.
Stairway to heaven, gates of hell. There's a lot of references between the three realms of access, not only from above down below, but also from below up going up.
Okay. And you're saying the adversary gave the builders the plans to build the Tower of Babel?
I would say that knowledge came from the serpent. If you read Revelation, he's telling man in the final final kingdom of man to make this image of this beast in order to build this kingdom. It's about the doorways. And when you understand that Satan is pretty much cast down to earth and is in the lower realm, you'd have no doubt that he wants to get out of there, and there's got to be a way out of there. And his whole purpose is to ascend his throne into the heaven. Mm-hmm. And with obedient man building these superstructures, and when you understand Washington is built and it's the sacred position where it's built and why it's built and for the purpose it's built, you understand that it was built in compliance with the serpent's voice in order to make this way out for him and to ascend his throne.
Yeah. Do you think that the serpent got his knowledge how to build these structures and doorways into the other side? Did he get that when he was in heaven? Did he steal the plans?
Well, that would be my guess. I don't know exactly how he got the knowledge for it, but there was at a certain time a lot of beings in the upper realm that did have knowledge on how to get down to this physical realm. So it obviously came from somewhere, and it would have to be from somewhere up there, I would say, somewhere out there.
Okay, so God destroyed the Tower of Babel and scattered the people. And where did they go? Where did all these people go? Is this where all nations came from?
Well, I would say that's where the kingdoms, even the Freemasons, they go back to trace their knowledge to Nimrod and the builder of the Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. And that's their whole purpose, and that's what the big draw is being able to have eternal life. And they pretty much got the information from the Egyptians on how to go into the underworld and how to be reborn and follow the path of Ra. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Stephen, when you see the hieroglyphs on the pyramids, you see the classic, I don't know, what is it, a cat head or a bat head, or, I don't know, a dog head on a human. Do you believe that creatures like that exist, or is they've just been artistically whimsical?
I'd say there's a lot of things that exist that we're not even exposed to yet. If you read Revelations and some of the beings that were around the throne, there's beings that are part beast and part man. There's a lot of different things that we're yet.
Well, if that's possible, you think we'll ever find a skeleton? Maybe they'd have to die somewhere, wouldn't they?
Well, that's a good possibility.
You're not an archaeologist, okay?
Hey. I don't know if they're down here on this planet, but there are. Uh-huh. I mean, the Bible talks about in Revelation.
Okay. All right, but so you just mentioned it. You just now tuned it in. You just now included it in the program. You said we're right at Nimrod, and you mentioned the Masonry. Is that the beginning of the Masonry religion?
I would say it was at the beginning of the Mason religion. As far as the first builders, the Tower of Babel was probably the first superstructure built for the purpose of the king to have access into the other realms to become a god.
So there's something supernatural or powerful, or they can open doorways in the act of building. Is that what this masonry? You always see a mason with like a trowel or a square in their hand, or trying to build something. Is that what it's all about? Is there something magical or spiritual or supernatural in the act of building?
Well, it's the making of something, and the whole purpose is to take something that's man-made and to make it into a god. In other words, if man can do what God did, that's the original temptation of being equal to God. If he can take an inanimate object and make it into a living thing, that's something that only God can do. But yet, man has made that claim on things that, even like the flag. If you look at the House document on it, it says it is to be considered a living thing. Well, how can you take something that's inanimate, something that man made, and have it become a living thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that only God's capable of.
So, I read that document about the flag, how it said it's a living thing. Is that why there's more concern that we don't burn the flag, because they consider us burning a living thing?
Well, it's when you think about it, there's a lot of patriotism out there and a lot of love, and there's a lot of people who've given their life and a lot of sacrifice, and there's a lot of feelings about it. Sooner or later, we're going to have to clarify. But yes, I would think it is an insult to God to take time to try to make a law to prevent a desecration of a flag when it's okay to sacrifice.
If you took threads and yarn and began to make a flag and then started sewing it together and threw it away, would that be an abortion?
Well. No, it wouldn't be an abortion. To some people, it would be more offensive, which is really kind of odd when you think about it.
So you're saying that patriotism is paganism or false worship?
I'm saying patriotism is that which deceives people and prevents them from seeing the possibility that which they love the most might be that which is evil that they were supposed to acknowledge and separate from. And it's hard to spot something when you love it, and that's the whole problem with patriotism is for like 13 years in school you've been taught mm-hmm. all these things that when you finally realize it's just not true.
So I know we might be going ahead of our interview here, but hey, you just got to go where the threat of consciousness leads you. But is that why there's so much effort to get kids to salute the flag? Are they really being diverted to salute a pagan god?
Well, if you look at the House origin, if you look at the origin of the flag, if you look at the House document, you'll see that it says that our flag was taken from the astral worshippers of Egypt and Babylon. In other words, the red represents the sun, the white represents the moon and the stars. It was a banner taken from the Babylonians and the star worshippers. These are people who worship the creation rather than the creator. And the whole thing of polytheism versus monotheism, that's the pagan's pantheon is the living ones, or which is the zodiac, which is the planets, and that's what they worship.
Well, you're beginning to make the connection, and hopefully, you know, I like what you said in your writings, Antebellum, and if we could ever get that up on the web, or maybe Steve will offer that as a CD somehow to get it to the people. But there is this one part where you said that the to believe the lie. Once you see the facts of it, a spell is cast off. Are you saying that people are under a spell and they can't see these things?
Well, that's the whole thing about paganism. Paganism, they are skilled at spell working, and they delight in desecration. And one of their greatest spells is a spell of strong delusion, that is a result of taking something that is pure and combining it with the profane.
Mm-hmm.
The Philistines did the same thing. They captured the Ten Commandments, and they wanted to display them on a public display, and they set them up next to their god Dagon. That desecrated the Ten Commandments, and the citizens had to pay the price for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was never meant to be displayed. It was never meant to be desecrated.
Mm-hmm. Would you consider paganism Easter eggs in a church?
I would say that the church has been infiltrated by paganism. The Roman Catholic Church has been infiltrated by paganism.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the church in America has been infiltrated by paganism.
And so
it's like, remember the Sabbath. I mean, that's not a very difficult commandment. It doesn't say to do anything except just to remember what the Sabbath was. And we can't remember the day that our Lord and our King, you know, acknowledged as the Sabbath. Easter is the same way. You know, it's like getting to understand his real name, Yeshua. It's hard to break away from tradition when people say Jesus, but it's a matter of respect when you think about it. If you're going to celebrate his birthday, celebrate it, you know, close to his birthday and not the birthday of the adversary. You know, if you want to know his name, then say his name the way he said it. If you want to, you know, acknowledge the Sabbath that he acknowledged it. It's either we want to be Christ-like and do what he did, or we're just basically just being servants of another religion and deceived.
I'll tell you what, if somebody that is currently under spell doesn't get anything you said so far, they are completely under a spell, and that needs to be broken here on the Edge Radio broadcast. Let's go back. Now we're at the Tower of Babel. We're beginning with Nebuchadnezzar. We're getting into the origins of masonry. But what's this? What does it mean? What's the difference between a free mason? Does that mean there was a bond mason or a mason that was not free? What is that free part about?
Well, the free and accepted masons were basically that they were free and accepted into the country where they would travel to do their building of structure for different kings and different kingdoms or whatnot. And there's two types of masonry. There's speculative and operative. The operative is like a regular brick mason, but the speculative is the ones who practice the esoteric knowledge that came with the building and the building of these superstructures. It's more of the occult. It's the knowledge that they obtained from the Roman College of Artificers, who got their knowledge from the Egyptians, who got their knowledge from the Babylonians. And it's basically all about this knowledge of opening the doorways and building these superstructures and obtaining unnatural knowledge and power.
Okay, you say unnatural knowledge. Is that because does God not want us to have all the knowledge we could possibly have? Or is he saying that there's some knowledge is good and some is bad?
Well, there's obviously knowledge of good and evil, and I don't believe I don't think there are some things that he wants us to be aware of simply because man in his reprobate mind couldn't be able to handle it and would not use it for good things and use it for wicked purposes. It'd be like atomic weapons. I'm sure, you know, there's probably a purpose for it, but I don't think man was intended to have that knowledge. I don't think man was ever intended to shed the blood of another man. I don't think homicide was one of those things that God instilled with. It was one of those things that result when man disobeys his word, which is life. He automatically embraces death and brings death into the world.
Okay. All right, Stephen Schroeder, we got to go to break. Everybody, you're listening to Stephen Schroeder, and we're talking about paganism. We're talking about the Illuminati. We're talking about Freemasonry. We're talking about what's going on in this country, and a lot of people have moved around the edges, but by the time we get done with these two programs, we're going to hit the beast right where it counts. You're listening to The Edge Radio Broadcast.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
To the second hour of the Edge Radio Broadcast. That's right, Indiana wants you. Come into the abyss, into the heart of the beast, in the middle, the crossroads of America, Indianapolis, and we're making the connection between the gates of hell and this very city and one of its residents who's exposing the beast. Breaking the spell, right here in the studio, is Stephen Schroeder. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, well, we were getting into it there, but I tell you, I think you bursted some bubbles there on the flag worship. For those of us who raise the flag in honor like it's some kind of god, I guess you could look at it that way. We raise it up, and you can't have a... You have to have a light on it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things and commandments that you have to do in order to even have a flag.
Oh, absolutely. It put too much honor. The flag represents the man, and the man represents the kingdom. And unfortunately, the Washington has declared himself to be a god. The kingdom is the kingdom of God. And you think it's bad when Bush thinks that God speaks through him, but this has been this way for some time now. And flag worship is flag worship, and unfortunately, it's one of those things.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we got the development of the Masons, free or otherwise, coming out of Nebuchadnezzar. Are they increasing at this point in the Earth's evolution? Are they increasing in knowledge and power of their spell working?
Well, their spell working's always been pretty good, except in the past they've had to worry about being caught. So I'm sure they kind of put a damper on things, and now they have the freedoms of having breeders and people sacrifice children on certain dates and times, mm-hmm. and have the freedom of religion, if you call it mm-hmm. that. So they're a lot more brazen, and yes, they're growing in major mass amounts mm-hmm. numbers.
Well, let's get into one of the more controversial questions. There are so many missing children in this country, and I believe it's 150,000 a year, and all of those children can't just be lost going down to the store, and they can't be being abducted by relatives, not all of them. Do you believe that there are children being snatched for any sort of pagan or occultic worship?
I don't know if they need to even be snatched. There's a slave trade and other stuff like that going on in the Arabian countries, but for the most part, child sacrifice is very important to them, and having the ability to have abortion on demand and doing their timing, you'll see a lot of that taking place.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to read what was a prophecy over Indianapolis, and then I want you to comment on it when we get done here, because I'll see if it corresponds with anything you said. This was a prophecy given by Dr. Bill Deagle, and apparently he got this while he was flying over Indianapolis. He said he was praying to discern the spiritual forces of darkness over this city, that's Indianapolis, in the territory of Indianapolis. He said as he prayed, the Holy Spirit told him in an audible voice, I send forth the angel Gabriel with a vision to show you the horrors that have inhabited this place. A gate to the evil one has been created in this place by the shedding of innocent blood. This place was made as a womb for the goddess Diana. Hence we have in Dianapolis, that's in Diana, who is the ancient and in times forth gave her womb children for sacrifice. The highest level Masons revere this place as the womb of destruction, for they come here to give the goddess her due, just as the ancient people of the lands that I drove out from before my people of Israel. See, hear, and smell the destruction and evil in the land, for I will make it a desolation. And there's more to this, maybe we'll read it more, but he's talking about that the Spirit of God showed him there are sacrifices and there are horrors beyond belief right here in Indianapolis. Do you believe that's true?
I believe that this was the capital of the Native Americans, and it was a place that was used for sacrifice downtown. The Monument Circle and the place itself, sacrifice is very important. There was a governor's mansion that was built where the monument currently stands, and of course the governor never lived there because his wife had a problem with airing her laundry, she said. But there was stories of young missing homeless boys that were being murdered in the basement of this governor's mansion and ended up missing, and they told people that there was a monster in the basement that had this insatiable appetite of bloodlust for young boys or whatnot, and the Indianapolis Star investigated and found out it was just a turkey. But it's very important, blood sacrifice is very important to these people, because that's the activator to get something to activate and to bring it to life.
Are you sure Catholic priests weren't operating that?
I have no idea who was actually operating that at the time, but
when you talk about missing kids or something to do with that, that's where you have to go right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, that's what happens when you mix a fertility cult with Christianity. You'll find that when you mix two things that don't belong together, it produces a synthesis that it has some damaging consequences. And just that whole issue of, unfortunately, the pedophile priest is what happens when you combine a fertility cult like Bell worship with the truth of Christianity. It produces you know, people who are involved with...
Masons and Catholic priests seem to have some sort of immunity from prosecution. I mean, the Masons have license plates. They have their special northeast corner bricks with inscriptions and incantations on every government thing, every monument that I see. But why is it Catholic priests get a fine instead of thrown in jail where they belong?
Well, it all has to do with money and politics and power, and unfortunately, that's the way the structure is set up.
Isn't that proof that they're beyond prosecution, that somebody else is protecting them from going to jail like all the other pedophiles should?
Well, in order to have law, you have to have law that's enforced equally without regard, and there's just so many people who's in powerful places that don't have to face any kind of consequence for their actions. It's what causes the destruction.
Yeah, well, I think we can allude to something that happened in here. Maybe we'll talk about next program, but we had something called the Build Indiana Fund with millions of dollars that turned up missing, and then the legislature passed a law to protect themselves from any sort of prosecution. So right there, the people in power, they can just create a bill to get out of it. Let's get back to the Masons now. They're gaining in power and in knowledge. Are they doing greater and greater demonic works at this time? What kind of works are they doing back in that time as we move forward?
Well, I think the greatest work they're doing, if you can call it great, is basically finishing the New World Order, or putting the capstone on the New World Order. You'll find that the New World Order, according to the scriptures, there's nothing new under the sun. So the New World Order is nothing more than the Old World Order, which was a democracy, a republic, had a house and senate. It's an exact replica of what we have here now, and the only difference is that it was polytheistic. In other words, the pantheon had its places of honor in the capital and the public buildings or whatnot, and the polytheism was the religion of the day. Now what you have is you have a president who is manipulating the church and deceiving the church into believing that he is a spokesperson for God, or that God is on his side, or that it's God's will for him to lead the church where it's going. And unfortunately, the church is deceived in a bad way.
Hmm. Okay, so now we're moving forward. How close are we to the Knights Templar? Are they involved in this conspiracy?
The Knights Templar, I'm not real familiar with a whole lot about the Knights Templar as far as Demolegs, if they were supposed to escort pilgrims to the Holy Land. And
well, are the Masons now, as they're developed, are they still Masons at this point? Or are they called something else before?
The Knights Templar?
Yeah.
I would say they're Masons. It's like the Scottish Rite, the Freemasonry. It's all part of a satanic secret society, whether you have like the Brotherhood of Death, the Fraternal Order of Eagles. It's like these guys put all these Ten Commandment displays in all the state capitals and whatnot, and they call themselves the Fraternal Order of Eagles, and they say they're not Masonic or whatnot, but kind of curious why they would have a Masonic deity engraved on the tablets.
Well, we tried to, we had a guest on last week, Major Jim Lindsay, and we were talking about the government. He said there's a coming new world order, of course, and then that there are the devils behind that. But why is it the devil has to take so long to take the world over? Doesn't he own it right now, for one? And why didn't, 1,000 years ago, without the technology, why didn't he have his kingdom then? What's the problem with him getting the kingdom? Who's stopping it?
Well, he's always been pretty much the God of Earth, as he's referred to, and even offered it to Christ in the temptation. If he would obey him, he would trade him the kingdoms of the earth. He's the God of the earth, which is kind of interesting. If you look at the Constitution, there is a deity specific name given in the Constitution. It's called the God of Nature, and unfortunately, that's the God of Washington, and that's the God who they serve, and he's the God of Earth. And
Well, this God of Nature seems to be popping up all over the place. It seems. Okay, so let's move on forward. Now we're heading. I guess, are we now past the Middle Ages, or where are we at now with the Masons? Are developing as a group, because we're getting close to the Pilgrims coming to America and bringing that, and the influence of Masonry. Then, what do we need to know in between those two points?
Well, here's what the problem was. Well, if you can call it a problem, we had Judaism, Christianity, and Islam came on the scene, and you had the three major faiths, and all of them are monotheistic. So therefore, the pagans, or the polytheists, are the ones who believed in the Roman pagan pantheon, and the god, many gods and goddesses, basically had to go underground simply because of, you know, the persecution of these three major religions that were always warring with each other, but also the pagans would feel the brunt of that. They basically went underground and went into secret societies and covens, if you want to call that, to reorganize and get together and try to find some way to where they could once again revive the ancient kingdoms like Babylon and Egypt and Rome, to where polytheism ruled and the pantheon had their places of honor.
Okay, so you're saying that the Romans was just a reincarnation of, say, the Egyptians? And they were reincarnations of the Babylonians.
Exactly, like the Egyptians had the same information as the Egyptians got it from Babylon, and the Romans got it from the Egyptians. It's like Alexander went to Babylon and Egypt to try to get some of this esoteric knowledge about this doorway, and that was the whole purpose, is to try to find this.
Now, this esoteric knowledge, this knowledge to build structures that are in the heavenlies, to bring them down on earth, I suppose they had to be pretty precise. They have to be in a specific geographical location. They have to align possibly with the stars. Are these things written down in a book, or are they handed down in the mind or verbally from the Mason to Mason, from generation to generation? Is there a central point of that knowledge?
I would say their knowledge comes from the zodiac. There was some Babylonian information. That's why it was so important to get the information from Babylon, as far as these superstructures and these doorways and these gates. There was this thing called a Tablet of Destiny. It was a Babylonian horoscope, and it's hard to show on the radio or whatnot, but it's a 13-house horoscope that the Egyptians used to chart destiny. And Ishtar, it was the Babylonian goddess of war, which is the consort of Enlil. And Enlil is the Babylonian word for the 50, which you understand why there's 50 states. It could be coincidental, but when you're talking about the god that they serve, the name Enlil is Babylonian for the 50. Well, his consort Ishtar is represented as an 8-pointed star, and she was the keeper of the Tablets of Destiny, and that's why they use the word manifest destiny. And
kind of cold war. You're saying that these words have a purpose, so what we would just look as innocuous words really have a meaning behind them.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right, everybody, we're going to go ahead and go to break. But before we do, chapter or paragraph 2 of the Vision Against America, or the Vision, or the Judgment Against Indianapolis by Bill Deagle. The first vision was of an underground temple in Indianapolis. It was a place of abomination and horror. In the chambers of this evil place, I observed, as Gabriel showed me, a consummated ritual sacrifice of a baby. In the spirit, I broke down crying at the terror and the inhumanity of this cruel and evil sacrifice to Satan. Still shaking, I asked, why did he show me this place?
Hello, everybody. This is Danny Lott, host of the Edge Radio broadcast. You know, what's making this show such a success is people like you, our loyal listeners. Tell a friend about the show. Call or email your local radio stations and tell them about the show. Let your local radio stations know that The Edge is a free broadcast with some of the most important interviews of our time. Micro broadcasters to giant radio stations can all broadcast The Edge for free. Tell them to upgrade their program lineup and get The Edge on the air in your area. I'm Daniel Lott, discovering the truth together on The Edge radio broadcast.
Welcome back to the Edge radio broadcast. Do you hear the drums of paganism in your area? In the studio with us this evening is Stephen Schroeder, and where you've been setting the groundwork for the paganism that is rampant in this country. But there's a paganism for a reason. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we've got the Masons now. They're getting their instructions from their worshipful master, the devil, I suppose, and they're trying to build things. But it seems, you have the pyramids, which now are uninhabited. You had the Tower of Babel, which was knocked down. But it seems like when they build a structure, they get knocked down anyway. Every time they build something, is it their building and God's knocking it down, or is there something that's going to last and to survive the destruction to follow?
It's sort of like the serpent swallowing its tail, that depiction. Everything's a cycle. The kingdom comes up, it pretty much eliminates its enemies, and then when there is no enemies, it pretty much turns and destroys itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cyclic process. It's all about the religion of the cycles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, so now we're moving past, let's go ahead and move past the Middle Ages, then, I suppose, because you're saying there's not much, just the same old Freemasonry tricks and tactics in the Middle Ages, but we're coming to the formation of America, I suppose, now. The Pilgrims weren't Freemasonry at all, were they?
Oh, I don't think the Pilgrims were, but there was, like I was saying, the three major religions were all monotheistic, and the polytheists were pretty much pushed underground, and their object was to come over here and establish a pagan empire to where they could exercise their religions and practice their sorcery and Egyptian high magic without consequence and pretty much open the doorways again and get things started. That's why you really have no need for Egypt or Babylon now, as long as you have America, as long as there's a doorway open.
Well, didn't they have choices of any country they wanted back then? I mean, if they're in control, they're the Illuminati type in higher government realms, couldn't they just seize a country of their choosing? Why did they pick America? What's special about it?
Well, I think America is special because of its location as far as its geographical spots and its energy sources. It's like Washington, D.C., the capital itself, sits on a very sacred spot. It was a hill to where the solstices and equinoxes are reconciled. It's a place that they consider in between heaven and earth. It's a very sacred spot. It's the Federal Triangle or whatnot. And the reason they had to have this is it's basically because of its significance and its importance as far as its relation to the energy grids.
Well, you can imagine running a show like this, how much email I get about different things that happen in coincidences, so to speak. Somebody sent me a map of D.C., and they said they had overlaid was the satanic goat's head, and I think, one ear was the Pentagon, was the White House, then the Washington Monument. I mean, you look at it, and you could see that if you had a goat's head or an upside-down star or something, the pentagram, I suppose. But is that somebody looking too hard, or do you think it was indeed laid out in that demonic to mimic a pentagram or a goat's head or anything else?
No, it's everything's laid out exactly and precisely the way it's supposed to, in accordance to the dragon's mandate. The pentagram they're talking about, the inverted five-pointed star, the tip of it goes on the White House. You have the Capitol, you have the obelisk, and you have the White House, and those three are laid out in the exact constellation of the three stars of Virgo. And basically, that's why it's set up the way it is. It's not coincidental that they have pentagrams and the different things laid out the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's all for a precise reason.
Okay, so let's say we got the Puritans who are trying to build a country that's based on, I guess, the Bible or whatever. But now we have the Masons come along with them. I guess the Masons were not on the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria?
No, I don't know exactly what the infiltration was as far as the Masons and the original ships of Columbus, but it was to establish a revived Roman Empire, and that's what the Antebellum is about. It's about the Masonic Roman Empire, a revived Roman Empire built by Freemasonry and Masons to establish and reestablish the pantheon and polytheism, to establish polytheism over monotheism.
Mm-hmm. You're saying once the Masons reestablish polytheism, then they will have reached the pinnacle of their evil deeds, and they will have what they've been trying to build since Cain?
The New World Order is a completion of the Old World Order, and they won't have that until they complete everything what the Old World Order was. And the Old World Order was where the state was considered a god, as well as the founder was considered a god, and citizens would have to acknowledge that all religions and all gods and goddesses are equal and good and beneficial for the state.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you think about these pictures that people keep sending me of George Bush and Laura Bush with the demon? I guess the kids do it at rock concerts. They have two fingers, the first finger, index finger, and
the goat's head.
What is that?
It's amazing. It just goes to show you the deception and how effective it really is, that you have a president who claims to be a evangelical Christian, but yet can throw up the allegiance to Satan. It's used to show allegiance to Satan. It's also used for spell casting. And there'll be people that say, well, that's the Longhorn sign of the Texas Longhorns. But he never attended that college. In fact, he was rejected from applying to that college, mm-hmm. because of his grades or whatnot. So there's really no reason for him to be flashing that except to show his allegiance to the goat.
So you're saying he's showing allegiance in plain view and everybody's missing it?
Absolutely. Sometimes the hardest thing to see is something so obvious and so profound that mm-hmm. people can't accept it as being true.
Yeah, well, I think Laura slipped up the last time when she was in at some a news meeting in Washington where she started having all sort of sexual innuendos. I think she started showing her goat's head way. But all right, so we've got the Puritans in American soil, and we've got the Masons coming up fast, trying to build their kingdom here simultaneously. Well, I guess they have to get rid of the puritanical laws that they established and move into the beginning of the Masonic reign in this country. And do we have a founder of Masonry in America? Or?
George Washington was considered the most worshipful master. If you go to the state capitol in Indiana, you'll see Washington standing there in his full Masonic regalia. And the base of the statue, oddly enough, it calls for the citizens to promote the best endeavors, to give their best endeavors to promote the honor and interest of the craft. If you know what witchcraft is.
And that's inscribed on the monument?
That's inscribed on the east face of the base. It's soliciting citizens for their endeavors to promote the honor and interest of the craft. Mm-hmm. And witchcraft is referred to nowadays as the craft. And mm-hmm. when you understand what the Freemasonry is all about and their sorcery and high magic, it's basically an unlawful solicitation of citizens to promote witchcraft.
Are you extrapolating, though, that the craft is witchcraft rather than the craft of building things, i.e. masonry?
Well, sorcery, and all you have to do is look at his regalia and look at Freemasonry and understand what they're building and what they're doing, to understand mm-hmm. whether they're laying bricks or laying the foundation for a building. They're involved with mm-hmm. sorcery.
Is there a group that's a part of the Masons called the Eagles?
The Eagles deny it, but the Ten Commandments that are saturated throughout all the states were donated by the Fraternal Order of the Eagles. And it's interesting, the Supreme Court recently just made a ruling on the Ten Commandments, and it was a split decision, or, you know, double standard, double-minded, however you want to call it. But they basically have the same agenda as the ICLU, to where the Ten Commandments that are the Protestant version are the ones that contain the Second Commandment and don't have graven images on them, must be removed. However, the Ten Commandments that were donated by the Fraternal Order of Eagles that are modified and have graven images of these pagan deities inscribed directly on the tablets are allowed to remain. And that's the problem with the pagans. It's not that Indiana is a place that's hostile towards paganism or non-religious or non-mainstream religions. It's a problem that pagans delight in desecration, and there's some desecration going on downtown. If people knew about it, they'd just be up in arms.
Hmm. Okay, all right, then we've got the beginning of Masonry in America, and they're going to start with their hero, George Washington. But now, you know, that napkin or towelette or whatever it is part of Masonry that they put around their waist. I believe that a Mason told me himself, and I asked him because he told me he was a Mason. He said that sometimes when they are initiated, they wear that hanky or whatever that is, and they're naked beneath that. Have you ever heard that? Is that part of the initiation?
Well, I know that the apron is like lambskin, and I always thought that was kind of interesting. It's like wolves in sheep's clothing. The aprons used for their ceremonies or whatnot. I don't know if they're naked behind or there's some of their ceremonies that go on behind closed doors, but I'm sure they're all secret for a reason.
So the most worshipful master, Mr. Washington. So when he refers to Providence, who's he talking about?
The provider, the God of nature, the one who provides. Whether you're talking about the sun or the moon or its influences on the earth or the earth itself. Divine providence.
So while the Christians are claiming that he was referring to the Creator, you're saying that he was referring to his most worshipful demon master, the devil.
Yeah, I'm saying the one who gave him the information, the power, authority, rule. That's where the deception, one of the major deceptions in the church today is that Washington obtained his power and authority to rule from God, which would make people automatically obedient and compliant with the directives of Washington. But when you understand that Washington got his power and authority to rule by complying with the serpent's mandates and directives to make this image and to make this kingdom, that puts things in its proper perspective.
Well, what did George Washington do to gain the favor of the adversary?
Well, number one, he had the bloodline. He was at the right place at the right time for the right job. As far as how he got to his position or where he was, I don't know. I don't know if I even want to try to.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't lay out Washington wasn't built until after the war, right?
Yeah, Washington wasn't completed, but I mean, as far as the blueprints and exactly what they was trying to do, that's the funny thing. Everybody tries to say whether, you know, it's a Christian nation or it's this, that, and the other, and they use sound bites of different people throughout their different times of their lives, which could justify either the pagan or the Christian view, whether it's a Christian nation or a pagan nation. But the bottom line is what they built, what their purpose was, what they was trying to accomplish. And when you understand that and the New World Order, when you look at the Great Seal and you understand what their God is all about and what they're doing here, it's the final battle between paganism and Protestants. It's the final battle between monotheism and polytheism.
Is Freemasonry in general, is that a religion?
I absolutely say it's a religion. They deny it's a religion because that keeps them out of trouble as far as, you know, the entanglement of church and state. But it's definitely a religion. They have rituals. They prayer. The problem is they use their grand omnific word as a combination of three deities' names to where they use Yahweh and Baal and Om and combine it all together into one name of their God. When that's what pagans do. They combine that which is pure with that which is profane. That's part of the spell working.
Now, does that, when they combine the profane with the pure, does that deactivate the pure?
Well, it definitely causes problems. When Moses brought the Ten Commandments down the mountain, when the tablets came within viewing distance of the golden calf, Moses had to throw down the tablets and destroy them because it was desecrated. Just like if a fly touches the ground, you destroy it because it's a desecrated. You know, God's able to preserve himself in it, but the desecration remains. I mean, it's one of those things to where there is a price to pay for it. There is desecration, and he doesn't take it too light.
Okay, well, suppose, now you mentioned that the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church in general are under a spell, and if there was something pure in a church that hadn't been corrupted by this mixing of unholy whatever, what would you see? Would there be a cloud appear in there? I mean, what's the advantage of having something pure? What would people get out of that?
Well, it's just like the Ten Commandments itself. The state capitol in Indiana had a Ten Commandments monument on its lawn, And it remained there for 33 years, and nobody had a problem with it, but they didn't realize the second commandment was completely removed and missing. They removed the second commandment, and then most importantly is they put a graven image of the god of Freemasonry directly on the tablets, desecrating the tablets. It's
okay. Well, I understand that. I understand the desecration of the pure with the unholy, which is the ultimate goal of Satan. Evidently, I think, even I don't know if you've said it, but I would assume it's going to deactivate the holy or the power. Are you saying that they had the Ten Commandments that were not mixed with the profane? Would Indiana in general, or any city that had something holy, would there be less crime? Would there be a revival? Would there be happiness?
Well, they're trying to say that the removal of the Ten Commandments and stuff like that out of school is the cause of all the problems and the increase of problems. But you understand, most of these tablets were donated around the late 50s and early 60s. So you can't really say that they were removing them, and that's the cause of the problem. It's you don't desecrate the Word of God, and for the state capitol to have a Ten Commandments monument that has a graven image of the breasted sun goddess, okay, directly on the tablets above the inscription, "I am the Lord thy God," that is just unexcusable, and it's a confirmation that you have a pagan problem in the Bible Belt. Mm-hmm. If you read the third sentence of the Indiana State poem, it says, "I must heed the native call, for a pagan voice within me seems to answer to it all." Mm-hmm. Okay, that tells you right there. It's like the news of today. You have the ACLU suing the House Speaker for using the name of Jesus in the House chambers, and you have the ACLU suing a judge because they violated the civil rights of a pagan family because they said he couldn't participate. His 9-year-old son couldn't participate in pagan activities, which the Indianapolis Star tried to seem like it was innocent as blowing bubbles and blowing on pinwheels and using super soakers and sparklers. But the point they was missing was the pagans practiced their worship in the nude, and I don't think it's good for a 9-year-old boy to be exposed to his own parents' nudity or the nudity of strangers. And the judge had a right to say that he couldn't participate in pagan activities, but they're trying to make it seem like Indiana is a hostile place toward non-mainstream religion and hostile toward paganism, and that the Christians in the capital are the problem causing this environment of hostility toward pagans. And they don't understand that the Christians are the minority, and it's the pagans that are the majority, and it's the pagans that are persecuting the Christians by desecrating that which is sacred to them.
Hmm. All right. When George Washington is becoming the leader of the country, and there are some kind of comparisons there. For one, call him the Masons call him the most worshipful master. He's also known as the Father, and he prays to Providence. And I don't think there's any reference to Jesus in any of his writings. From what I understand, it's all Providence. So that didn't really say that he's a Christian. But is he at this point beginning to? When they're laying out, or after the war, I suppose, laying out D.C., are they already thinking about Indianapolis and its connection as far as when the sun set or the pagan connection at that time? Where does Indiana become part of their masterful plan?
Well, Indianapolis was part of the plan when they realized where the capital capital currently sits was owned by a Roman named Pope, Francis Pope, who bought the land and called the Potomac River the Tiber River and said this is going to be the place of a great kingdom with no end, because he knew of the significance of its location to where it was the equinoxes and the solstice were reconciled at this one point. And where the equinoxes travel out westward, it's the National Road, and you'll see it coming right into Indianapolis into this monument circle. The Indianapolis was known, it was the capital of these Indians, these Adena Indians that actually had all this knowledge of the Egyptians and the mound building and preserving this knowledge. So Indianapolis was known because the Egyptians knew about the path of Ra. The path of the god was a 12-hour journey above ground and a 12-hour journey heading back in the other direction underground. And so Indianapolis was that perfect place. It's got the crossroads of Ishtar, and it's the place where the sun and the moon are united.
Mm-hmm. Can a devout Christian also be accept the title as Grand Worshipful Master of Masonry?
No, I don't think so. There's specific instructions. Call no man father down here. And they call Christ good, and he said, "Why call me good? There's none good down here." So calling somebody the most worshipful master, calling him father, it's just a continuation of the blasphemy of acknowledging you can't serve two masters. And it's just interesting.
So you're saying that if you're a Christian, you can't be a Mason?
I would say the time in the past you might, and fortunately we serve a very loving, merciful God, but you can't serve two masters, and I would say you're playing with fire, and if you are a Mason, you need to get out of it immediately, because because if you need some information, I can give you all the facts and figures.
Well, if Washington was a Christian, why doesn't any of the vast writings we have ever mention him saying the name Jesus?
Well, that's just the thing. If you're a true Christian, it'd be kind of hard not to have all those writings out there, even if you are trying to, you know, be neutral and be tolerant of all the other religions or whatnot. But the reason there was no mention of it is because he wasn't a Christian. He had no need for a savior because he was a deist, and in his opinion, man's nature wasn't corrupt. There was never a fallen man, so there was never a need for a savior.
Was it the Masons that was supplying the funds through any other government or whatever for the early Americans to win the war?
Well, that was the problem. You had a lot of people that were involved in the British, as far as British officers that were involved in Freemasonry, whose alliance was to the overall big picture of the New World Order than to the British government. And there was a lot of wars and battles that were lost that people couldn't even explain to this day how it happened. But it was pretty much a conspiracy, a global conspiracy for the pagans to get their property and to establish their New World Order and mm-hmm. and revive the Roman Empire and get that pagan pantheon back to their place of honor.
I don't know this much about the history of the dollar bill, but did George Washington approve that pagan symbol on there?
He approved it. Thomas Jefferson came up with a lot of the different designs. Thomas Jefferson was the father of archaeology in America, and he had one of these Edina mounds in his backyard that he was able to dig through and find information. There was a lot of information being extracted at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the Great Seal itself is, if you ask the Bureau, they'll tell you that it's an image of God. But if you look at the Great Seal in the eye, it's representative of Washington, D.C., and the Capitol and the obelisk and inside the Federal Triangle. So when you look at the Great Seal and you're saying it's the Great Seal of Authority and it's an image of God, mm-hmm. it's an image of Washington. It's the mm-hmm. city layout.
Well, if George Washington was a Christian, it seems like he'd want to put a cross under the dollar bill, not the all-seeing eye of a pagan goddess or whatever.
Yeah, I have no doubt he had nothing to do with Christianity except to use it. And you can't use sound bites and little, you know, one-liners from people to different parts of their life to justify. I mean, if the historians looked at George Bush 200 years from now, they would swear up and down that he was an evangelical man of God and not realize, you know, it's just to the contrary, he's a pawn.
Okay. All right, Steve, we're getting near the end of this broadcast, and then next week when you come back, we're going to be talking about this connection. Now, we've laid the groundwork, and now if people weren't shocked at anything we've talked about tonight, they will be next week because the proof is coming out. And like you say, it was right on the Miami downtown, George Washington says right on there, he's a grand worshipful master. I mean, you know, how much more does it take to convince people unless they are under a spell and they can't let go? If you're out there saluting the flag, you need to know what it stands for. If you're praying to George Washington as your father, you know, you need to be thinking about that too. Stephen, when you come back, will you be ready to present your evidence of the paganism going on in Indianapolis?
Yeah, we come back, we'll talk about breaking the spell, the state of the church, the problem of what's going on, what we're going to do next, and how we're going to salvage it all. The time's real short, and we've got to do something quick.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you for coming on the broadcast, and we'll see you next week.
Very good.
All right, everybody, you're listening to The Edge Radio Broadcast. This evening's guest is Stephen Schroeder, and we're talking about paganism, the Illuminati, and its connection, and the spell working. Are you under a spell? Now, there's another paragraph from the judgment against Indianapolis. Gabriel said, the highest level Masons of this land come here, that is Indianapolis, to ritually sacrifice babies. The evil one demands the shedding of innocent blood, for it is the greatest blasphemy against the Holy One of Israel. Tell the people of the living God he will repay the evil sons of the illuminated ones. That's a prophecy over Indianapolis, and we'll read some more next week right in the middle of our interview with Stephen Schroeder. A couple of weeks we'll have coming on Jordan Maxwell talking about secret society, and he has some information to continue the thread of consciousness about the secret society and what effect they have. And you know what, I'd rather know the truth than to continue in the goo of the matrix. My name is Daniel Lott. You need to stay tuned every week as we bring the best shows to you. And if you have a guest suggestion, go to the edgeam.com website, click on Fast Blast, and or you can go, and there's actually a suggested guest. But like my program said, my program director said in the first hour, go to the forum, continue to talk about what we're talking about tonight, or any previous guest if you'd like to entertain the conversation. So many knowledgeable people, and the best and brightest go to the edgeam.com website, and they go to the forum to post their comments and to have a great conversation about these things that we find out here.
Back home again in Indiana. seems that I can see the gleaming candlelight still burning bright.
Listening to The Edge with Daniel Ott. To subscribe to The Edge newsletter, log on to TheEdgeAM.com. That's TheEdgeAM.com.